folks, and welcome to another episode of the Positude Podcast. I'm your host, Maggie Hart, sharing knowledge and information this week from my big comfy chair because I'm still having some knee issues and leg issues, but it's improving. I'm able to get up and walk around some of the time without crutches, and the swelling's gone down considerably, so I put out an extra chair to accommodate my knee, which means there's a little less room this week in my living room to have you all gather around, sit down, and be comfy, but we'll make the best of it. I've got my coffee. Hopefully you have your beverage of choice. Let's get started, cannolis.
Excuse me. I happen to be passing. I thought you might like some coffee. Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you.
First of all, we have Representative, Rhode Island Representative Sherry Roberts, who's trying to show the committee graphic pictures that are in children's library books. And they're telling her that she can't show them the pictures because they'd be considered contraband.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. Before I begin my testimony, I'd like to draw your attention first to a 5-page packet of child sexual depictions via both drawings and very lewd descriptive writings. Could we please just show this to the committee members, please?
Is that actual? Is that actual images? Is that like?
Yes.
Yeah, you can't.
That's contraband.
To distribute it would be a crime, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we don't want to do that.
Well, I thought that there was okay because I remember the police in here showing pictures when they were trying to pass some legislation before. Mm. And they showed some graphic pictures to people on the committee. So I thought that that was okay to bring into committee.
I don't know what it is, but out of an abundance of caution, I don't want to put you in a position to have somebody criticize you for that.
That's fine. It was one sample of many currently being marketed to a target audience of children. So obviously, if I shouldn't be showing it here, it probably shouldn't be marketed to children.
Yeah.
So it is being made available to them. So make no mistake, I recognize immediately when I see attempts to groom children for pedophilia. By grooming in this case, I mean sexualizing and normalizing sexual acts between children and others. The acts depicted often come in the form of graphic cartoons, sketches, or writings promoting dangerous promiscuity, depicting sexual fetishes, often promoting incestuous acts, bondage, the subjugation of women, and the glorification of women being raped, to name a few. If this is not the definition of obscenity, then I don't know what is. If this content was shared with you by a colleague, would you not rightfully be offended and consider it to be sexual harassment? And why then are we allowing our children to be exposed to this very same offensive material? The graphic photos that I was going to present to you should be appropriately labeled free porn for children. Rest assured that these insidious attempts to condition impressionable children to accept non-age-appropriate sexualized material and behavior as normal is a surefire way to confuse minors, said they are no longer able to distinguish the difference between acceptable behaviors or abusive behaviors, as the instinctual red flag trigger warnings that children are naturally born with will become fractured. They will no longer alert the unsuspecting child, turning our vulnerable children instead into easy prey for pedophiles. Do we not have enough deviant behaviors to contend with in society without promoting these harmful, degenerate behaviors into the minds of young, vulnerable children? And at what point do we find that these fetishes of depraved minds should take priority over the very best interests of children? Because that's what appears to be happening. In conclusion, as a person acutely familiar with child abuse, it is my contention that providing graphic pornographic depictions of any kind to minors is absolutely the first stages of child sex abuse, and my legislation seeks to criminalize these depictions as such. When this issue becomes a major topic of national debate, how will we in Rhode Island be remembered as having stood on this issue? I urge you to pass this obviously necessary legislation.
Okay, so they don't want to look at it because it could be considered contraband. But this is something that's being distributed nationwide to our children in our public school systems and also available in the public libraries. I know this for a fact because I've personally seen them with my own eyes at local public libraries. Let me ask you a question. While state laws regarding the purchasing of magazines like Playboy and stuff vary, and generally there are no age restrictions for buying that type of magazine, federal law prohibits the sale of materials that are harmful to minors, which could include and absolutely should include those types of magazines and literature. Local libraries and other public institutions might have their own policies regarding access to those materials, but there's been a lot of pushback lately about that especially, and some people keep them behind the desks at the libraries and you have to show your card but not necessarily prove you're 18, but it varies for like Playboy magazines and stuff. However, the children can go right to the youth section and have access to and take out these materials that are way more harmful than the graphics contained in like a Playboy. They're actually instructing children on how to perform these extremely perverse and sick sexual acts. And yeah, they're absolutely pushing the LGBTQ agenda and also desensitizing and grooming children. So how come they can do it for free, but yet federal law dictates that children can't purchase those materials that are considerably less offensive in nature, potentially? So obviously somewhere along the lines, the federal government had an issue with that, but we can put it in the schools for free, in the libraries for free, where the parents have no control and no say over what their child is having access to? Make it make sense. We need to do better for our children. We need to be on this at every single school board meeting, and we need to be opposing this left and right. And as I've said for many years before on my show, seriously consider homeschool. Just my opinion, but I don't think Sherry Roberts was as forceful as she could have been, but at least she attempted to address the issue. In Hyannis, Massachusetts, a registered daycare provider had her boyfriend, her father of her children, who was an illegal immigrant who was charged with rape of a child in his own country, hiding out at her daycare.
Ma'am, we just wanted to ask you about your daycare.
Since our visit in March, the family daycare at this Hyannis home has closed, and the owner, Franciel Nunez, has allowed her daycare license to expire. This is a screenshot from before Nunez's name was removed from a database of state-approved child care providers. The Department of Early Education and Care, or EEC, gave Nunez a daycare license in March 2022, but that never should have happened. She was hiding a secret.
13 anos em Minas Gerais. Thiago Lucas, de 30...
Andre Thiago Lucas is the reported father of Nunez's children. ICE says he was sentenced to 9 years of prison for the rape of a 13-year-old girl in his home country of Brazil.
Nothing surprises me anymore. Do I find it wrong? 100% wrong.
Pepper spray.
We need to do a better job of protecting our children, our elderly, and those who cannot protect themselves. Is another state government official gonna go and try and save his ass too and bring him back after he gets deported? Pete Hegseth is making some changes in the military. It's about time. Somebody did.
We are leaving wokeness and weakness behind. No more pronouns. No more climate change obsession. No more emergency vaccine mandates, no more dudes in dresses. We're done with that.
Yeah, come on through, buddy! Yeah! Let's go!
And a homeowner in Illinois took matters into his own hands when the cops would not get squatters out of his house.
But there was already people inside.
I couldn't believe it. It was like a nightmare.
Velasquez says a woman named Charmaine and her boyfriend Codero moved in, claiming they recently purchased the property. He says the couple showed police this mortgage document, but Cook County confirms they don't see this mortgage on record. Velasquez's realtor recorded this video as the couple explained to police they had a right to be there.
Y'all bogus right now. I listen, bro.
He says police told them under Illinois' current law, they couldn't remove anyone.
I said I'm not moving out, and I said at the one point they gotta leave, they gotta get tired of us being in the property. I called a couple of friends, stay overnight, and I knew they were not gonna like that.
So you're telling me that you and your friends came in and moved in with them?
Yes.
Velasquez says he, his wife, and their friends got a few air mattresses and spent the night with the alleged squatters.
We stand in the living room. We were washing all the time the door. They stand in one of the bedrooms.
The next morning, he says he realized they were not budging.
They're like, oh, well, we want $8,000.
Velasquez says they negotiated. He had the couple sign a cash for key agreement, and he paid them $4,300 to leave.
We didn't want to give them money, but we heard, you know, really bad stories about squatters taking over properties 6, 8, 10 months, even a year.
It's values today. Standards are crumbling.
I wouldn't personally have paid to get them out, but at least he took matters into his own hands. And again, I need to reiterate, like I did last week, that the cops are trying to do their jobs in a situation where their local government is bucking them in these sanctuary cities, and they can't always effectively do their jobs. Also something that needs to change. Probably the biggest news of this week is the Pope tryouts are over. I got that from The Leighton Show. He's extremely funny. So I have a series of Pope clips. Let's call it Pope-O-Rama. The first one is going to be Damon Amani, and he is on The View putting Anna Navarro in her place because she's attacking the Trump Pope meme. Let's listen in.
Him tweeting out an AI-created image and the White House official account of him posing as the Pope is disrespectful, it is frankly disgusting, and it is outrageous. And so all of those devout Catholics that voted for Donald Trump, I think you need to ask yourself some questions, and I think you need to ask the White House and Donald Trump some questions, because Trump, Mr. President, it's his holiness, the Pope, not his oiliness, the dope.
And you're a sanctimonious joke. But look, the bigger picture is right here in my pocket, and I will pull it out. This is Rihanna dressed as a Pope. Olympics 2024, mocking Jesus Christ's last meal. Over here, camera, over here. Don't run, because Trump only posted a meme. But these are actual photos, and I don't see that same energy of yours, Anna, when it comes to Hollywood actually mocking God. This is Madonna on a cross as Jesus Christ.
We'll be right back.
I'd like to be Pope. That would be my number one choice. No, I don't know. I have no preference. I must say we have a cardinal that happens to be out of a place called New York who's very good. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, hanno eletto il nuovo Papa. E chi è? E non mi ricordo il nome. Ma è un Papa italiano, è il Papa portoricano, tedesco. Che fai? Papa l'americano.
So that was two Italian guys talking about the election of the new Pope. And the one guy says he can't remember his name. So the other one goes, well, is he Italian, Puerto Rican, German? And the other guy puts on sunglasses and plays the Papa Americano song. Here's a clip about the Pope being a Midwesterner.
The Pope's a Midwesterner. He's going to put the Pope in Pope.
Pope's a Midwesterner. He's going to rename the Cardinals to pheasants.
The Pope's a Midwesterner. Bread and wine is now cheese and beer.
The Pope's a Midwesterner. Collection baskets now accept Kohl's cash.
The Pope's a Midwesterner. Babies are now being baptized in ranch.
The Pope's a Midwesterner. Vatican City's getting a quick trip and a Culver's.
Pope's a Midwesterner. Your penance is now 10 Ope Sorries.
The Pope's a Midwesterner. Tell your folks I says peace be with you.
And also with you.
Amen.
Pope's a Midwesterner. Putting ketchup on a broad is now a mortal sin.
It's a Morty for short. The Pope's a Midwesterner. He walks on water every winter.
Pope's a Midwesterner. Body of Christ or no?
The Pope's a Midwesterner. Your bartender can now officially hear confession.
Pope's a Midwesterner. Mass is now going to be 4 hours long due to the Midwest goodbye.
Pope's a Midwesterner. Now you can hunt deer in church cemeteries.
Pope's a Midwesterner. Altar boys are now wearing camo and blaze orange.
Pope's a Midwesterner. Obviously, he's a Packers fan.
No, dude, he's from Chicago. He's a Bears fan.
He's not a Bears fan. He's Catholic, not Lutheran.
He's a Bears fan.
What?
No. Oh, now you got to go to confession. That's 10 Ope sorries, Charlie.
So, much to my great-grandma's chagrin, my namesake from Italy, I'm going to explain something to you. The Pope should not have been a never-ending office with continued elected popes. There was, basically, the Roman Catholics took the Bible and twisted it the way that they wanted to so that they could have somebody in charge in power to dictate what the rest of us should do. I'm going to prove it to you. This clip is a few minutes long, but listen closely.
Have a new Pope.
We have a Pope. Was Peter the first Pope? Well, according to the Catholic Catechism, Peter is the unshakable rock of the Church. He's also the Vicar of Christ and pastor of the entire Church with universal power over the whole Church, a power that he can exercise unhindered. Notice here that it never says the earthly Church. It just says the Church. Are there two churches? And then he has a universal power over the entire Church. Does that mean the earthly Church and the heavenly Church, or just the earthly Church? And where in the scripture does it make the distinction of there being a earthly Church and a universal Church? So Catholics, if the Church is one Church, then how come you have two heads? Jesus the head and then Peter the head? Or is just Jesus the head, or is just Peter the head? We can't have more than one head of the entire Church. What Catholicism does is it takes a passage out of Matthew 16 and it defines all the other passages of the scripture in light of that one passage, instead of taking all the other scriptures and interpreting the one scripture in light of all scripture. When we come to verse 18, we have some very interesting things in the Greek. In verse 18, we see that Peter, when Jesus is speaking to him, he says, "You are," in masculine, Petros, which means small stone. We can see this same word here used for Peter actually used that way in 2 Maccabees, the Apocryphal books, chapter 1:16 and chapter 4:41, where they use the same Greek word for Peter here as a stone, a small stone, one that could actually be thrown. Then we see Jesus shift the conversation from Peter, Petros, to this rock. And this rock here is the rock in the Greek, and it is Petra. It means a rock or a cliff, a giant rock, something massive. And whenever the rock is used in scripture symbolically, it always symbolizes the Messiah. However, you don't have to be a Greek scholar to understand what Matthew was writing. Even when you look at the English, it's very clear that Jesus did not say that you are Peter and upon you I will build my church. He didn't say that Peter was the you that he was going to build his entire church on. It is the I. Who is the I speaking? Jesus. But even if Catholics want to claim that Peter is the rock of which the whole church is to be built upon, then it would have been Peter, the person of Peter, because Jesus did not say or indicate or any of the apostles teach that Peter was a symbol of an office or title. However, even in the English, it's clear that Jesus shifts from talking about Peter to talking about himself, and himself indicating as the giant rock, as the cliff, as the cornerstone.
That was from the Bible in context, and it is in context. The Pope? Not in context.
My pappy used to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if it is broke, get a hold of Maggie Hart at Maggie_HEART at outlook.com to get it fixed.
I'm in love with the queen of cannoli.
I got caught at work saying that my job is monotonous, and then they fired me. But they said they didn't fire me because I said my job was boring. They said they fired me because of illiteracy. But I'm not racist, and I'm pretty sure that they're just being sexist. Can I sue?
Pretty crazy article here from the New York Post yesterday. Headline says, Bush official claims the U.S. built a secret $21 trillion underground city for the rich and powerful to live if a near extinction event ever happens. A couple of things about this. What this article is referencing is Catherine Austin Fitz's interview on Tucker Carlson's podcast from a week ago. So New York Post is like a week late with this. I wrote a Substack article a week back the day after it happened, diving into it and analyzing her statements. So the Catherine Austin Fitz interview is probably one of Tucker Carlson's most important interviews to date because she brings up deep underground military bases, all the missing money from the Pentagon and government budgets over the decades. She also brings up breakthrough energy, she calls it, or free energy, otherwise known as, zero-point energy, whatever you want to call it, pretty freaking incredible that these topics are hitting the mainstream, now getting reported in mainstream news websites, deep underground military bases, missing money, free energy. She also discusses magnetic pole shifts. Just go watch it. One of Tucker Carlson's best interviews he's done so far with Catherine Austin Fitz. Go watch it.
Okay, that clip was from Jordan Sather, and yeah, more conspiracy theories that are real. Imagine that. Next, we have a guy in a Guy Fawkes mask talking about how RFK is going to ban pharmaceutical ads on television.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., recently appointed as Secretary of Health and Human Services, has announced plans to ban pharmaceutical advertisements on television, a move that could trigger significant shifts across multiple sectors. So what happens when the biggest cash cow for corporate media, big pharma advertising, disappears? For decades, the pharmaceutical industry has pumped billions into TV networks. Not because ads sell drugs. Most of us already get our prescriptions from a doctor. But because those ads buy silence. Silence on side effects. Silence on corruption. Silence on the fact that medical regulators, from the CDC to the FDA, often serve Big Pharma's interests, not yours. Now imagine a world where the cash flow stops. Media giants will crumble overnight. Highly paid anchors, gone. Networks will panic. Some will shut down. And for the first time in decades, we'll see real reporting on the pharmaceutical industry's crimes, on drugs that don't work, on studies that were buried, on regulatory agencies that knew and did nothing. It's happened before. They once told us cigarettes were healthy until the ads were banned. Only then did the truth come out. And here's something they don't want you to know. Pharmaceutical advertising is illegal in every country on Earth. Except two. The United States and New Zealand. Ever wonder why? When Big Pharma's ad dollars vanish, so does their control. The media revolution is coming. And for the first time in a long time, the truth might actually have a chance to be heard.
Pfizer.
This weather report brought to you by Pfizer.
Today's countdown to the royal wedding is brought to you by Pfizer.
And now a CBS Sports update brought to you by Pfizer.
This portion of CBS This Morning sponsored by Pfizer.
On how to find the hidden sugars in the American family diet. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Okay, so this guy has a pretty optimistic view of what will happen should the ads be taken down. While his scenario would be the totally ideal, I'm not confident that it's going to swing entirely that way. Next, Dell gives a message to the mainstream media regarding the jab for kids and the MAHA movement.
I hate to be so emphatic, but we've been ridiculed and lambasted by every one of you over and over and over again while our children got sicker and sicker and sicker and more of them died. 38,000 reported deaths for the COVID vaccine alone, and none of you are asking a question. How do they explain that? Wouldn't we pull any other product in the world? No, in America, we say let's give it to the children now. Let's put it on the schedule for children who have a 0.0002% risk of death from COVID. These are shocking stats that I've never seen you report on. We'll see if you start reporting now that we have a truth teller inside of government. And we'll see if you start reporting as you watch this movement in the hands of the people. MAHA movement growing every single day. They're going to look for who's telling them the truth. They've seen who's lied to them. Maybe they can forgive you. I will if you start doing your job. Thank you.
We're going to war.
Okay, so we're starting to see some disclosure, and that's a good thing. But we're also being made a lot of promises that we are not exactly seeing come to fruition, at least as of yet. The fact that a lot of these issues that we were previously gaslighted, yes, and called conspiracy theorists for are now coming to light, and they're admitting a lot of these things, that's great. But as you've heard me say for years on my shows, we need to not be complacent. There needs to be accountability, and we need to do our own parts in our communities. We need to be vigilant, and we need to stay prepared. We need to stay positive. Because my family's been in the meat industry, the restaurant industry, and the trade industry for generations, this next clip is absolutely no surprise to me. It's nothing new.
He says he was forced to make old food look fresh. That's why he secretly recorded his supervisor admitting tampering with best before dates is industry standard.
Every store does the same thing. All the other stores do the same.
At his home, Safari demonstrates what he says is done at work. He takes cheesecakes weeks past their best before dates, adds new toppings, and sells as fresh.
I decorated and I'm selling expired stuff for...
In a national online call-out, Marketplace hears from grocery workers at smaller stores and big chains, sharing stories of food tampering. He used to work in a Toronto area supermarket. He shows us how he was told to give old meat new life.
If it's like this, we would dabble in a little bit of blood, throw it into the meat mincer with some redder meats, and then all together it would make it look red. And then we put it back up on the shelf.
At the University of Guelph, a microbiologist simulated what grocery insiders told us they do. He discovered toxins and bacteria linked to serious illness.
Someday I'll do a show on some stories that I have to share about when I used to travel with my pop to do meat inspections at other grocery stores in the chain that he was a manager for. Bleach was not uncommon to use in meat, also to take the smell away. This is also why I encourage you guys to buy local from organic farmers, ones that are not putting any injections into their meats, and to develop community ties so that you can barter foods and goods and services. And also, I constantly encourage you always to have your own organic garden. Raise your own chickens so that you can have your own fresh eggs, and raise your own meat if you're able to, and to learn how to can and preserve all of your food. Retail cakes right now are about $30 a piece where I live. Do you really want to spend that for something that's 6 months old and stale when you can make your own? Speaking of spending money,
if you like Maggie and the sound of her voice and want to keep her airing quality shows, I'd be much obliged if you donate to the network, because those folks are dirt poor and rely on your contributions to keep the lights on. Bless their hearts. And yours too.
There's a banking protocol in the United Kingdom that dictates that you need to tell the bank what you want your own money for in order to be able to withdraw it. And they're requiring or requesting that you have proof of the sale that you want to make with your money.
What are you doing, sir?
I'm filming you and I'm recording this conversation. I'm coming to the bank to withdraw £2,500. Are you going to let me? I've got £11,500 in my account. Are you going to let me? Are you going to let me have the money or not? Hello, are you going to let me have the money or not?
You can't remove this restriction.
After your colleague told me I'm a liar, yeah? So your colleague told me I'm a liar yesterday. I've come in to withdraw £2,500, yeah? And you're not going to let me have my money today. Is that right?
But you can still use your card.
I'm not. To answer the question, please, yeah? I can still use my card. Are you going to let me withdraw £2,500 from my account today, yes or no, in the branch?
And what is the £2,500 for, Mr. Jackson?
To buy a motorbike for my son.
Right.
Right, okay, so have you got any evidence of the motorbike?
No, I haven't got any evidence of a motorbike at all, no, I haven't got it, so I don't know what one I'm getting yet.
Okay, so if you don't know what you're getting, how do you know how much you need?
Because I've got a budget of £2,500 for the motorbike, so that's why I'm sure I want to withdraw £2,500 from my account today.
Right,
yeah?
So when you find the bike for your son, if you can show us some evidence of that. So you're not going to give me the money, no? I'm going to hang up this immediately.
Absolute joke,
okay,
this place.
Call the security.
Absolute joke. You're an absolute joke, this place.
Could this be where we're headed? How would you handle that situation if it happened to you? The next clip is of a British guy asking if he put 100 British people up against 100 Americans, who's gonna win? Let's listen to this. Super Kiera answers the question.
100 British people versus 100 Americans, one big room, no weapons. Who's winning?
I'm genuinely not even trying to be patriotic, but I truly believe that against 100 British people, 30 Americans could get the job done and take the W. And to illustrate this, I'm going to draft a very diverse, broad-ranging fantasy team of 30. Here we go. Two people from Appalachia born and raised among the mountain folk. Two Floridians with a criminal record. Two blue-collar workers from Boston. One drunk Eagles fan born and raised in Philly. One Waffle House employee any state. One corn-fed Midwesterner, one emo Midwesterner. That's 10 right there. Then we add one grandma from Louisiana, one old man from Atlanta. Two Italian Americans from New Jersey, one with mob connections, one without. Two women from the LA area that identify as Chicana and wear gold hoops. One veteran who has definitely committed a war crime. One polyamorous person from the Pacific Northwest who still believes everyone should be masking. One gay man from Rhode Island who identifies as a bear, and that one girl in high school who smoked weed and has a big ass tapestry in her room. That's 20 right there, which I think could get the job done, but just in case there are any duds, let's add one citizen of Texas who refers to themselves as a patriot, one no-nonsense softball-playing lesbian, one no-nonsense basketball-playing bisexual, one middle-aged dad in the suburbs who directs people pulling out of parking spots, one cowboy, one cowgirl, one farmer, one person from Baltimore, one person from Chicago, one New York City cab driver. That's 30 right there. They're taking it.
Vive les colonies américaines!
With the alarming rise in autism rates in children, we've talked about it quite a lot, and I'm always on the lookout for something that might help the parents of autistic children. Let's listen to this next clip from Dennis Eschelberger.
Have you heard of the Sermon story? This might be one of the biggest medical cover-ups you've never heard of. Sermon is a drug originally derived from compounds found in white pine needles. It's been used for over 100 years to treat African sleeping sickness due to its powerful anti-parasitic properties. It works so well that the World Health Organization supplies it for free in parts of Africa. But here in the U.S., it isn't approved by the FDA, and the only way to get it is through the CDC under strict medical supervision, essentially making it off-limits to the public. Now, here's where it gets wild. In 2017, Dr. Robert Naveau out of UC San Diego gave a single low dose of Sermon to five boys with autism. Within hours to days, their language improved, social interaction increased, eye contact returned, and playfulness and awareness came back. One child who had never spoke said his first full sentence. These kids experienced a complete metabolic reset. However, Sermon can't be patented. No one owns it, no one profits from it, and therefore the study didn't receive any funding. Dr. Naveau even went $500,000 in debt to run the study himself. And the results, well, they were essentially buried. If you search for it, you'll find fact checks and misinformation because this is so much bigger than potentially curing autism. If Sermon works, it supports a massive shift in everything we've been led to believe. It would validate something called cell danger response, a theory that autism isn't purely genetic, but rather a metabolic shutdown triggered by toxins, infections, or chronic stress. If this were true, it would shatter the current medical narrative and expose a multi-billion dollar industry on symptom management. And maybe that's why you weren't supposed to hear about Sermon.
We haven't done any safety clips in a while, so I'm going to play one, followed by a new scam to be aware of regarding QR codes and packages.
Please stop, listen, because this could potentially save your life or your loved one's life. If you are ever hiking, if your car breaks down, you run out of gas, you're trapped in flooding waters, and you notice your cell phone's battery's dying, you have no way to charge it, or you have no reception at all. Do this one easy step. It could literally save your life. Change your voicemail. Change your voicemail with your approximate location. What is the issue? You're injured, car's broken down, you ran out of gas, your location, and any special instructions that they may need to find you, whether it's via walking, to find your car information, whatever they may need to make it easier to find you. Because when your cell phone dies and or you have no reception, your voicemail still works. They will call your phone and hear your information, your location information. What is wrong with you? What do you need? They'll get all that vital information and they can get to you faster. Please, this could literally save your life. Change your voicemail if you're ever in any one of those scenarios. Winter storms are coming. Hurricane season's hitting us right now. Please take this seriously. Save it. Peace and love. Stay safe. I love you.
If you or anybody you know recently had a package delivered to the house, you need to pay attention to this video because the police are warning of a new scam that people are trying to use. So basically, this police officer warns of a terrifying new one-step scam that allows hackers into your phone within just a matter of seconds. And to be specific here, the scam involves getting a package from a very recognizable brand, and it even has your name and address on it. And I think this is terrible because they're adding a sense of security by having all of your personal information listed on the box. What you really need to be looking out for is a QR code. Now, this can either be printed on the outside of the box or included inside of the box itself. Just make sure that you do not scan that QR code. This is the most important part, as that gives access to the scammer to all of your bank information, credit card information, pictures, phone numbers, and even contacts. Everything that is in your phone can be easily accessible if you just scan that QR code, and it'll immediately send all of it to the scammer. Something also to keep in mind is that you probably will not even realize that this is happening even after you've scanned the QR code.
That was Billy Robino and Calvin Johnson. Revisiting what we were talking about earlier about the fact that a lot of people that voted for Trump are pretty upset with the way things are going. They just don't seem to be happening quickly enough, or we're not getting the information we were promised, even though we are seeing some changes and some things being instituted. Whether or not they're being followed through on remains to be seen, as we talked about last week, partially because of liberal tactics to thwart the agendas and the executive orders put in place. There's a woman named Whitney Webb who does joint interviews a lot with this guy, Mark Goodwin, that I've heard about for a long time, but I never actually listened to her until just a couple of days ago. These next clips are very lengthy and they're from about 9 months ago, but I feel it's important information to share with all of you. Also, part of what she says has more affirmation for me. It literally gave me chills when I heard her talk about what we need to be doing, how the changes are going to come from the ground up or need to come from the ground up, and how we need to be diligent and not be complacent. Go back and listen to my archives if you're a new listener, and you will see that what she's talking about as far as that part of it, I have been saying literally for years on my shows and using almost exactly the same verbiage. It's eerie and super cool all at the same time. You may not agree with everything that they have to say, but please just listen with an open mind. Remember what I always tell you, question everything and don't follow anyone blindly.
The next president, who we know now will be Trump, is going to face some sort of U.S. government debt crisis. When Trump was in office last time, BlackRock designed U.S. fiscal response to COVID that they began implementing before a pandemic was even declared, and it resulted in one of the biggest wealth transfers in American history and printed more money than at any other time in U.S. history. I've been really skeptical that that won't repeat itself. Well, I just want to start off with saying that I definitely empathize with the view, just like I did in 2016 and other elections, that the Trump ticket was the lesser of two evils. But I think after the first Trump term and the precedent set by campaign rhetoric versus policy action in that first term, I've been really skeptical that that won't repeat itself. Right. And so you're already seeing, since Trump was elected, sort of these, sort of signaling that, someone like Mike Pompeo or some figures that have neoconservative bents, like Marco Rubio is being considered for a cabinet position. Mike Pompeo has been fielded for Secretary of Defense. People that worked right under Pompeo or have been tapped to lead the transition team for the State Department, things of that nature. The apparent signaling and claims from people like Howard Lutnick, co-chair of the Trump transition team, that RFK isn't really going to have any role in any sort of HHS or HHS sub-agency. Are these the beginning signs of backpedaling? I think it's fair to be skeptical and be vigilant. Particularly what I would warn against is the idea that now that the lesser of two evils has won, now is the time to sit back and just let things happen and not hold anyone's feet to the fire and not ensure accountability. Because I think that's, you know, a recipe for disaster, frankly, when people are complacent and too trusting. Consistently, politicians abuse that. And there's a very long, long track record of that happening in American politics with both parties, right? And what I've been saying a lot since the election is that complacency and the efforts to manufacture it are dangerous, I would say. And what I'm concerned about is that the people that were most against a lot of these efforts to undermine our freedoms, a lot of them being on the right, for example, are people that were, you know, dissidents of the COVID era and COVID era policies, you know, and gun owners, for example, who obviously have a way to impact, you know, the fate of the country if things were ever to get really, you know, tyrannical. You know, if they're overly trusting of the federal government, they're more likely to be, you know, complacent and sort of just sit back and not really do anything because they trust the person that is in power. And unfortunately, I think there's bipartisan agendas that even with, like, you know, in 2016, Republicans also sweep the legislature. They took the executive branch, but it didn't result in the populist platform that was necessarily promised. So I think, you know, if people don't want to ensure that the country does go on a better track, there needs to be, you know, pushback, and people need to not just, you know, sit back in their armchairs and trust the plan or what have you, and need to really ensure that, you know, like I've said for a long time, since I get accused of not offering any solutions, you know, I've said for a really long time and for many years on your show and other shows that I have long believed that change is going to come from the bottom up, not the top down, and that people need to really ensure and focus on their local communities, on local resilience, and on building out alternatives that can help us resist a lot of these technocratic, you know, agendas that seek to micromanage and control, you know, essentially every aspect of our lives.
You said Trump's going to win a landslide earlier.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think I echo pretty much what Whitney just said. Last time we were on here, it was like, well, Trump's obviously going to win. That's obviously what happened. And I think, you know, maybe a lot of the things that have happened, you know, the last few years have been kind of setting up for this, like, huge populist movement, you know, that was, again, curated by oligarchs, social network billionaires, all these people that kind of control these like DARPA cutouts and these projects and, you know, these social networks gearing up to be, you know, like in X's case, half the financial system, you know, whatever. We have all these guys working together, working on their podcast strategy that was talked about by Dana White during the acceptance speech. And it was a huge part of the election cycle. And if you look at it, you know, I don't really believe in elections. I thought we kind of all agreed on that. I think that the Uniparty is going to do what it wants to do. It's this Purple Party entity. This idea that there's really this dueling faction between the two of them, I think that's just really, you know, it's like wrestling. I think it's really just this kind of like scripted thing that they give to the masses. Politics has become bread and circus. And now we all get geared up and they use it to divide ourselves, you know, to divide the masses. And they, you know, I think, as Whitney said, very prudently, specifically kind of aiming this Q, Trump as the savior stuff at the dissident armed group in America, you know, they've been able to sort of manufacture complacency and consent for what they're going to do now. And I think Trump has, you know, he has this huge mandate now. It's very obvious. Everyone feels it. He's, you know, swept, you know, all three important elements of the American government system. And now we're going to see what he's going to do. So it's not like the whole election cycle I was going around being like, how dare you vote for Trump? But it's over. It's done. Here we are. If you believe in elections and you want to vote, that's great. You like Trump, fine. But the state hates you. They are murderers, terrorists. They throw good people in jail. Like, the state put Ross in jail. Trump was president for 4 years, didn't free Ross. Let's get him out of here. Yeah, that's a great win. But I really think the mindset should be, let's hold these people as accountable as possible. Let's not, you know, I was going to say something gross there. Let's not, you know, dust them, you know, their undercarriages. You know, let's hold them to the fire. That's what we need to do. And I think that there is such an opportunity here when there is a populist uprising and a movement. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I feel like it was really captured into this controlled pen, you know, back to the electoral system, back to the state, back to, you know, Poppy Warp Speed being our savior, and that's just, I think, kind of ridiculous. As Whitney said, it comes from us, from the people. So let's take this movement, that there are a lot of truths in this movement that I think that I do agree with. There are elements of freedom and libertarianism and even anarchy tossed around in this MAGA soup. But ultimately, I think the mechanisms are not what I agree with. I don't want the state to have any more power.
What the hell? Oh my God! No way!
See what I mean? It's like she's taken a page out of my book from my interviews, my shows over the past 8 years, as far as what she said about Americans and not being complacent. Starting from the ground up, these movements need to happen. The most important thing that they touched on, I think, was the part about the gun owners. How, because everybody is so in love with Trump and he's for the Second Amendment, when people get comfortable, they tend to get lazy and they have that false sense of security that we can never have when it comes to our freedoms. And we've spoken about this for years on the show too, is that our rights are slowly being eroded and taken away from us. Sometimes it's not openly apparent, but that doesn't mean it's still not happening. So this interview was by TFTC, and it's entitled Whitney Webb, The First 4 Years of America. About 9 months ago it came out. Please listen to the whole interview. Listen to anything you can get your hands on with this girl. They expose a lot of political corruption on both sides of the spectrum. She tells you things about Elon Musk you might not be ready to hear, and other people in Trump's personal circle, as well as she talks a lot about Epstein and P. Diddy and exposes a lot of stuff you might be surprised to find out. Remember me talking to you about the white square, black square thing on the chessboard? We've gone all through this. Listen to the archives. Also, listen to Probably Alexandra if you want a Christian perspective on all of this. She is the closest out of anybody I've listened to as far as prophecy and getting this right. So on Tuesday nights at 10 Eastern Standard Time p.m. on ERRT Radio, Wednesday nights 9 o'clock on the Vera Radio Network, and most other nights in that time spot. It used to be every other night, but now it's most every other nights at 9 o'clock. My reruns are aired on that network, and then Fridays at 8 Eastern Standard Time on the Trim Radio Network. I am on Rumpel, I'm on Spotify, I'm on Amazon, I'm on iHeart, I'm on YouTube, I'm on Podbean and Mixlr, I think, too, and a bunch of others I can never remember. If you want to learn from me, I have classes, I have intuitive guidance, spiritual help, whatever it is that you need, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, get a hold of me at Maggie, M-A-G-G-I-E _ heart, H-E-A-R-T @outlook.com. Okay, since they were seriously comparing previous administrations in that last long clip, I wanted to do a comedic comparison of Trump versus Obama. And the soldiers who were listening to this clip are laughing as it's playing, so it's really cute.
The United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden. Abu launched a targeted operation against that compound.
They did a lot of shooting. Even not going through the front door. You know, you think you go through the door. If you're a normal person, you say, knock, knock.
After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
He died like a dog.
Does not mark the end of our effort.
A beautiful dog.
We give thanks for the men who carried out this operation.
And I don't get any credit for this, but that's okay. Here we are.
May God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
And I'm writing a book.
You are listening to the Positude Podcast with Maggie Hart. Stay tuned.
The entry music, sometimes my halftime music, and the ending music are all provided by my good buddy Pat Carr, a wonderful original musician from Louisiana, now residing in Colorado. You can check him out at http://www.itunes.com/Pat Carr. Pat's at All Music, Apple Music, YouTube, SoundClick, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes. He is all over the place. Please check him out. Support his music and tell him Maggie sent you. Tonight's question of the week, do you live more in the past, present, or future? You've been listening to my shows for a while, so you know what the right answer should be. And it's Gen X time. Tonight's topics from A Back-to-Back by Gen X Jono are Mad Dog 2020 and music.
Okay, America.
All right, I guess today the part of America will be played by me. You called?
I've been recommended a drink that I've never seen before.
Dude, for your sake, I hope it's not that.
MD 2020.
All right, somehow even worse.
Couple of questions.
Yeah, well, questions are part of the process. More after the drinking than the before.
We went where?
I did what?
I was with who?
You'll see.
What does MD stand for?
Major disappointment. Mandatory detox. Memory depletion. Magically delicious. And with that, those Lucky Charms.
And why 2020?
20 ounces, 20% alcohol by volume.
Let me know if that's the best flavor to try.
We didn't drink it for the flavor.
People told me the blue one is the best one.
Yeah, later that one did look prettiest when hitting the white porcelain of the bowl. Kind of like a blue Santa Flush vibe.
It doesn't give much away on the ingredients.
Another MD? Mystery drink.
Ooh, smells fruity. Kind of smells like
regret in a barren field the next morning, asking yourself, why?
Candy, a little bit.
Yeah, that too, but you gotta remember, the intended demographic at the time was like 14.
Oh, what on earth is in that?
Experience. And the instant disintegration of judgment. Well, good judgment, anyway.
It burns.
That burn?
The burning means that it's working.
That's how we knew it was working.
MD 2020.
Sounds about right.
I have a question. Is Gen X, are they mean people?
Hey, short answer, probably yeah. Long answer, also probably yeah. Why do you ask?
In general.
Oh, in general, well, in general, maybe. But I say maybe as in maybe that dog bites. Maybe that bear is dangerous. Maybe that squirrel has rabies. Generally, it doesn't hurt to think of us as an approach with caution generation. But for the most part, we only attack when provoked.
Somehow. A Gen Xer always finds me, and the meanest, rudest comments is always coming from a Gen X.
Did one of us call out your mama? Yeah, we tend to do that from time to time.
And I never say anything bad about them. I have nothing against them.
Oh, really?
Our generation had the best music of all times, okay? Who did your generation have? Gen X, don't tap in. Don't tap in, Gen X. This isn't about you, okay?
Now, I don't know if that falls under play stupid games, win stupid prizes more, or F around and find out. But you can't say something like our generation has the greatest music ever and ask Gen X to tap out.
Growing up, we were the generation that liked to fight a lot. Let's just say what it is. We were the fighting generation.
Boomers and Xers fought on the playground a lot, too, and in the bars. And now in the comment section, I guess.
Also, Saturday morning at 2:24 a.m., the Cosmos 482, the Russian spacecraft, crashed over the Indian Ocean after 50 years in space. It was supposed to have launched to go to Venus, but it had some problems, never made it there, and was kind of been orbiting around for the past 50 years, and it crashed. The interesting thing is, originally they thought that it was going to crash near Elmira, New York, which I know very well, and that would have been extremely interesting. We're not sure at this point, because it just happened this morning as I record, whether the whole thing ended up in the ocean or just part of it. We'll have to wait and see. And did you know that Chinese students are required to spy when they come to this country? I bet this one shocks you, because it did me.
And this should shock no one. So the report came out. It said right now in the United States of America, at one of our universities, there is an organized, orchestrated spy ring. To put this in perspective, when I got here, I said, when I was told that there was a Chinese law in place that required Chinese nationals, including students that come to the United States on visas, and by the way, we take 300,000 Chinese students a year into our universities, there's a law in the books that says they have to provide intelligence gathering and information to the CCP. We also had information in Congress before I even got here that they were setting up these programs to organize spies and push them into our universities using visas. And when I got here and realized that there was no law stopping the visa program, even though we had that information, I immediately launched a bill that would end visas for Chinese students. Now, nothing against Chinese students that want to learn. But if you have a government that is enlisting them, and not just enlisting them, requiring them by law under penalty to be espionage agents when they get here, we cannot keep inviting them into our nation. And so time after time over the last few years, we have found Chinese students with drones, cameras on our military bases, stealing information at our universities, and nothing has been done. So when this report came out 2 days ago, I was not surprised, because we launched this bill and we've been advocating and trying to get someone's attention that there were spy rings here right now. Now, hopefully, we will see some action, not only by the university that's been informed of this, where their students saying it's happening, but by the government to do an investigation.
That was Senator Ashley Moody of Florida. And this from a sheriff in Florida giving a press conference on ostensibly a recent break-in and shooting.
The bottom line is, this is the state of Florida. You want to break into someone's home, you should expect to be shot.
Do you have any advice on our four people on how to keep their stuff or themselves safe?
Well, if it's me, I'm going to have a firearm. You know, everyone is different, but I'm going to exercise my Second Amendment right. I'm going to have a firearm, and, I praise this husband for doing what he needed to do to protect his home and protect his family. And if you're going to be that brazen to come into my home, once again, you should expect that you're going to be shot.
Every state should have this mentality. You're able to protect your family, and it's also a huge crime deterrent at the same time. People are going to think twice about trying to invade your home if they know they're going to get shot. It's definitely a do you feel lucky punk moment, because they don't know if you've got a gun or not. And not my favorite, but Governor DeSantis announces the Second Amendment summer tax holiday.
We are unveiling the Second Amendment summer tax holiday. So from Memorial Day till the 4th of July, you can get your ammunition, your firearms, and your accoutrements tax-free in the state of Florida.
So I like him a little bit better today. Lastly, we talked a little bit last week about parasites, and in doing my research for dementia and Alzheimer's and things like that, we talked about the relationship with those in regards to chemtrails and GMOs and also the jabby jab. Now there's a parasite that I discover that also could be responsible for things like Alzheimer's and dementia. Let's listen.
This is the number one parasite responsible for mental health challenges, as well as numerous different neurological conditions like Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, and Parkinson's. Toxoplasma gondii has been estimated to be in 30 to 50% of the world's population. It's often known as the cat parasite, which is exactly why they tell pregnant women not to change kitty litter. However, that's not the only way that you could be exposed to Toxoplasma gondii. You could have undercooked meats like pork, venison, lamb, could have unwashed fruits and vegetables, as well as picking this up simply through the soil. When it comes to symptoms, this parasite can show up in a variety of different ways. Mental health challenges like anxiety and depression, neurological conditions like Parkinson's, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's, bipolar disorder, OCD, autoimmune conditions, chronic fatigue, infertility, and other hormone imbalances. But the mental health impact is one of the biggest.
That was from the biohacking bombshell. I've been following her for a while and just happened to come across this. She's got vitamins or supplements or whatever that you can do to clear it, but you can research it. I plan to. With the unprecedented rising of cases of dementia and Alzheimer's, I think personally, we've talked about this before on the show, that chemtrails are at least partially responsible. If you or someone you love is having these types of symptoms, I would absolutely look into the protocol to get healthy. This could be the answer to our prayers for family members that are suffering from these issues. Well, we've had a lot of positive stuff come out of this episode and new news stories to spread our awareness. Hopefully you enjoyed tonight's episode as much as I have, and thank you all so much for listening and being a part of this journey. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Same time, same comfy couch. Good night, all. Stay safe out there.